New Perspectives Open Pitch presents Memoirs of a Little 'Un, a 10-part collection of heartwarming stories and reminiscences of growing up in rural England during the 60s by Chrissy Payne. Part 9. Testing, testing.
The population of our little town hadn't really altered that much through the middle of the last century. Indeed, it almost seemed that the rest of the country was developing at such a pace that somehow we'd been forgotten. But I think this oversight suited most people. Consequently, when I started school in 1964, the one primary school served the whole town. I love school from day one. The only slight fly in the ointment is that it is situated at the other end of the town, a good 25-minute walk away, and even longer for little legs. Father comes to the rescue. Little 'un can come in with me to the police station and then walk the rest of the way to school with a teacher, Miss Bottom. Dear Miss Muriel Bottom. A most unfortunate name for a primary school teacher, but years of schoolboy humour, each one thinking they are being original, have left her quite immune to jests and sniggers. And it must have come as a great relief to her when Miss Sheila Brest joined the teaching staff. With the arrangements in place, I set off early each morning with Father to the police station where he is Detective Sergeant. The station is an old Victorian red brick building that had been purpose-built. Sergeant Lewis is usually behind the big polished wooden counter when we arrive, and a roaring fire, well banked up, fills the cast-iron fireplace. I can't imagine anywhere more cosy and charming to be arrested and charged. Father's office is upstairs, the walls coated with the same shiny gloss paint that is used throughout the building, and another big roaring fire graces the big high-ceilinged room. In the far corner sits 90 words per minute Daphne, her tricel sweater and tweed skirt barely discernible beneath a cloud of cigarette smoke. I adore Daphne. She always makes a fuss of me and lets me use her big imperial typewriter. She happily prepares two pieces of paper with the blue carbon in between, although my one-finger typing exploits on the keys have to be abandoned if an urgent document is required. To see Daphne at full speed is absolutely inspiring. With Embassy cigarette poised in the corner of her mouth, she faultlessly clatters over the keyboard, the noise supplemented by the jangling of her numerous gold bangles, with a charm bracelet adding to the effect. The carriage of the typewriter seems to whiz across at phenomenal speed, and then Daphne would release the completed missive, correct in every detail, with a flourish. Sometime after, I was aware of some grown-up talk, and this involves Daphne's husband, who has passed away recently. Following this sad news, Daphne has the unenviable task of sorting out her late hubby's effects. And amongst them, a very recent purchase he has made that she gifts to my father, knowing full well he'd make great use of it. It is the very latest Grundig reel-to-reel tape recorder, and although I'm unable to tell you which model it was and all the techie stuff, I can say that Father was overwhelmed with this latest of gadgets. We only ever referred to it as the Grundig, in a similar fashion to those fortunate folk who say they're out in the Rolls or the Bentley. Occasionally, I'd inquire as to Father's whereabouts, and Mother would respond, "He's with the Grundig. Don't disturb him." It sounds more like an audience with the chief inspector than a tape recorder. The Grundig goes into overdrive. Father records quarter peals, half peals, and full peals of his beloved bells, doing a little introduction himself, sounding more and more like Alva Liddell with each performance. I record my own versions of Downtown with Petula Clark Classic and Terry, an altogether miserable song by Twinkle that has topped the charts. Father decides to have some fun with the Grundig, and forever the practical joker, he'd already decided who his next victim would be. Winters really were winters in the 1960s, so it was with great relief that one Thursday in early March we awake to one of those teasing spring days. You know the sort. Birdsong in full throttle and daffodils seemingly bursting into bloom in front of your eyes. Thursday is still early closing for the shops in our little town, and Father knows that Fred, our neighbour and very keen gardener, will want to take full advantage of the fine weather by spending the afternoon on his patch in our very large garden. Sure enough, directly after lunch, we see Fred walk past the living room window and make his way into the garden. Too early for planting, of course, but nice to be outdoors and do a bit of tidying up. After 20 minutes or so, Father ushers myself, my sister Susie and mother upstairs.
"Come and watch this," he says, "but not a sound."
It's chilly in the bedroom as the window is wide open, and we creep in following Father's moves as he silently beckons us towards the window. We have a reasonable view of Fred through the skeletal branches of an old pear tree. Father crouches down and switches on the Grundig.
Cuckoo! Cuckoo! Cuckoo!
The recording he'd made the year before was perfect. Mother is horrified, Father fit to burst, and Susie falls onto the bed, squashing her face into the pillow in an attempt to suppress her laughter. I watch, wide-eyed, as Fred darts around in animated fashion, looking skywards and sideways. Father, a master at practical jokes, knows not to over-egg it, whatever the temptation to do so, allows another 10 minutes to pass before playing the recording again.
Cuckoo! Cuckoo! Cuckoo!
This time, Fred throws his garden fork to one side and rushes up the garden path, making a beeline for our back door. "I'm not answering it," says Mother indignantly. So, Father, fully composed, goes downstairs and opens the door to a breathless Fred.
"Did you hear it, Sam? Just now, a cuckoo. Clear as a bell, I tell you. You must have heard it."
"A cuckoo, Fred? Are you sure?"
Father's voice full of surprise and disbelief. "It's not possible. Far too early in the year."
"I heard the cuckoo, I'm telling you. I know a bloody cuckoo when I hear one. I bet a week's wages on it."
Fred isn't going to be fobbed off. Father hasn't accounted for the next development.
"I'm going to cycle down to the Mercury office. Eddie will know what to do."
Eddie is the editor of the Mercury, our local paper, and a scoop such as this will make a welcome change from reporting on beetle drives and jumble sales.
"That's Tornit," says Susie. "We'll have a garden full of twits and the national press."
"They're called twitchers," Mother corrects her. "Your father has gone too far this time." As we contemplate our next move, still peering over the banister at the top of the stair, I visualise Fred pedalling at breakneck speed to the Mercury office, his bicycle clips, which he seems to wear permanently over his thick cord trousers, and his old tweed gardening jacket unbuttoned and billowing about his wiry frame. Father rushes up the stairs 2 steps at a time, and before Mother has chance to admonish him, he has collected the Grundig and is off. We heard the Ford console fire up, and he's gone. Father returns an hour or so later, whistling as always and full of the joys of spring.
"Where have you been?" inquires Mother.
"Just nipped to see old George Wessel at the farm," he replies.
"What, with the Grundig?"
asks Mother. The doorbell rings and Fred is stood in the porch.
Come on in, Fred. Just in time. I was just going to suggest to Mother that we might need to borrow a tea urn for tomorrow if we are to expect a lot of twitchers and the press. Well, I'm not so sure, Bob,
Fred replies, still a little breathless after his hard cycle ride.
I had to wait for Eddie to get back to the office, and I just started telling him about the cuckoo when Stella took a telephone call, and then another, of a reported cuckoo calling near Langham. Can you believe it?
Continues Fred, removing his cap and scratching his head.
Fancy that. 3 miles away.
Do you think it's the same bird, Fred? Father replies, as cool as a cucumber. Now Mother chips in.
We'll have to call George Wessel and see if he's heard it. His farm is in Langham.
Mother concludes her sentence, giving Father one of her knowing looks. Even at my tender age, I twig what has gone on. Father has coerced his old pal George into the prank. Despite all of Fred's best efforts, he didn't hear the cuckoo again, at least not in our garden. I don't know what happened to the Grundig. We never threw anything away in our household, so I guess it's languishing somewhere, a shed or attic, perhaps. If by any chance you come across one complete with recordings of church bells, a small child singing downtown, and a cuckoo calling, then let me know, as I would love to hear them all again. The End.
Testing, Testing by Chrissy Payne was performed by Juanita McMahon, with sound design by Adam P. McCready. Supported using public funding from Arts Council England. It's produced by New Perspectives Theatre Company's Open Pitch, a unique community programme that showcases extraordinary stories from across the East Midlands.